Well, here we are in Edale. I'm standing in the campsite here. It's early morning, and most people are still in bed, you know, but stalwarts we are. We've got up early, and we're about to have breakfast and then embark upon the Pennine Way. It was 1974 when we last did it. Things have changed a little bit since then. Most of us have changed quite a bit, actually. But it's 40-odd years, but it's a nice day here. The valley is really quite broad here, and the hills are ranged all around us, rolling and green. And this morning, when we first got up, it was very misty. There was a cloud inversion, just clouds just sitting in the valley in the cold air. But now it's warming up, and it's the sun is out. There you go. You can't have better than that, can you? So I'm standing here amongst the tents and caravans. It's actually quite quiet. There's not that many people about, really. But just after the bank holiday, I think it must have been a bit busier a couple of days ago. So we're in this little village. We had a few pints in the Nag's Head last night. And my head remembers that too. So hope to see you along the way. We'll be setting off shortly up Grinds Brook and on to the start of the Pennine Way. We've got to tackle Kinder Scout today. Kinder Scout's not a particularly massive hill, but it's topped with a huge bog, and that can be quite a challenge. So we're walking today to Croden. That's about not too bad a day, really. It's about 16 miles, and I don't know, about 1,600 feet of ascent. So, but we'll know about it, you know. My legs are quite unsuspecting at the moment. They don't know what's coming, but my brain does. So, I hope to see you along the way. Well, there, we've made it to the Kinder Plateau, which is at the top of Grinds Brook. When we started off from Edale, it was like a broad open valley, but the further you go, the higher you climb, I was going to say glen, it's not a glen, it's a valley, isn't it? The valley narrows until there's a final tiny little rocky scramble that gets you up onto the plateau. The plateau's dry today. There's quite a few folk here, mainly lost, I have to say, or trying to find a different way, to be fair. It's dry today, but it wasn't particularly dry when Martin and I came here 40 years ago. The place was absolutely saturated, and so were we, to be honest, by the time we got here. So we're going to set off shortly on this beautiful day, I have to say. It's a bit windy, but it's very sunny, and it's above all, as I've said, it's dry. So from here, we head off into the peat, into the Gruffs. I think I'll put a few photographs of that on my website, which is a fairly unique landscape up here, really. Imagine a sea of black peat that rolls away from you. That's probably the best way. Waves of peat, if you like. I suppose it's an elevated bog that's been eroded by years and years of absolutely horrendous downpours, is the only way of describing it. So, right, we're going to go across. We're going to cross Kinder by the route that we crossed in 1974. The Pennine Way very cleverly avoids that route now, but unfortunately Martin insists that we have to go by the way that we went in the past. So, who am I to argue? See you later. Right, well, we've made it now. We're at a place called Kinder Downfall, and it's the far side of the plateau from where we started, so we managed to get across. It wasn't too wet, surprisingly. Well, it's been very dry this May. This winter, I should say, has been exceptionally dry, and so a lot of the bogs that sort of swallowed us in the past were actually bone dry, but we did manage to find a few areas of saturated black peat. So, you know, we're happy with that, really. But now we're at Kinder Downfall. Kinder Downfall is where the Wee River, that runs from part of the, I suppose it must begin on the plateau. We can't start anywhere else, really, can it? It starts somewhere on the plateau, and it falls, as the word implies, over the edge of the small cliffs that run around the edge of Kinderscout. The downfall can be quite spectacular. I used to live in Sheffield for many years, and I used to come here quite regular, and I used to work as a social worker in Barnsley at the time. And Barnsley folk say, what do they say about Barnsley? Barnsley folk, strong in arm and thick in dead. Now they say that, so it must be true. Anyway, I used to come to Downfall. And it can be a very spectacular place here. Sometimes, in wet weather, there's quite a waterfall comes over here. And in very, very windy weather, the downfall can be blown up. So it becomes an upfall then, doesn't it, I suppose? But the wind can actually pick up the water as it comes over the waterfall and push it back onto the plateau. Very spectacular. It also, in some winters, when you get a really good cold winter, it freezes. And it becomes the only place in Derbyshire where you can actually practice ice climbing. So I used to come here in cold weather, and I remember here once, and it was sheathed in ice. I've been climbing up and down it and around it and all sorts, and I was at the bottom of the ice fall when there was a thump in the snow just behind me, and I turned around and someone had dropped a claw hammer off the top of the cliff, and it had missed my head by about 6 inches. And this bloke comes around the corner inquiring if I'd seen his claw hammer. Well, I informed him I had, and I also informed him where I was about to shove. I wasn't too impressed, you know. Anyway, onward. We're heading towards Bleaklow now. Things are going quite well, I have to say, so far, but we'll see what happens. I'll see you on the summit of Bleaklow, with a bit of luck. Okay, bye-bye. Well, I'll read you a wee excerpt of my book, The Last Hill Walker, which covers the day Martin and I crossed Kinderscout Plateau on a day, I have to say, very, very different from the day we met in 2017. Soon we are climbing up into the clouds that sit on the top of Kinder, hiding it from view. As we climb, it begins to drizzle, and the unfamiliar weight of our packs grows with each step. The drizzle soon gives way to rain, and we are forced to put on our rain gear. The only thing my meagre budget would allow was a PVC contraption known as a pack-a-mac. In the 21st century, these are all but extinct, but appear to be alive and well in the USA. You'll occasionally see herds of American tourists being shepherded round Edinburgh wearing their regulation beige outfits and sporting pack-a-macs to keep out the Scottish weather. The pack-a-mac is totally weatherproof but fragile and cleverly designed to hold every drop of condensation and press it as close to the body as possible. For protection against the rain, Martin has somehow acquired a voluminous yellow cycle cape, complete with a matching sou'wester hat. The cape is fine as long as there's no wind, but should there even be the suggestion of a breeze, the yellow covering inverts itself. And if it can't actually carry Martin away, it tries to throttle him. After half an hour in the deluge, we are soaked and struggling to make headway against the wind and rain. What we don't know is there is far worse to come. We are about to encounter the black beast at the heart of Kinderscout. I'm following the twists and turns of the vague path, head down, trying to keep the rain out of my face, when the ground gives way below me and I sink to my knees in the black, slimy soup. My feet have stopped, but the weight of my rucksack keeps my upper body moving and hurls me face forward into a pool of blackness. Martin laughs. I try to get up, but I can't get any purchase in the mire, and the weight of my pack pushes me deeper. I lie face down, swearing for a moment. Martin laughs again. When I wriggle out of my rucksack and manage to regain the vertical, black ooze drips from the shiny surface of my pack-a-mac. We have entered the peat, Kinder's secret weapon. Nothing in our Lake District travels has prepared us for this. The path is dissolving into an organic black custard, a sort of liquid coal that fills my boots and squeegees between my toes with every step. Kinder Scout doesn't really have a summit. It's like a mountain with a top cut off. What's left on this stump of a hill is a plateau of peat hags, mounds of peats topped with grass, conveniently the height of a man so you can't see over them. In thick mist and rain, like it is today, it's a navigation nightmare. As we huddle round the map, I drip black sludge onto the contours. Martin wipes the map clean wordlessly and tries to line the compass up with a feature neither of us can see. I'm beginning to make some sense of maps now, but here, in this featureless wilderness, my fledgling skills desert me. Martin takes a bearing, then passes the compass and map to me so I can check it. What do you think? I look to my left, rain and peat. To my right, more rain and more peat. In fact, that's all either of us can see in any direction. I have no idea where we are or which direction we should go, so I say with confidence, "Looks about right to me," and pass the sodden map back to Martin. Martin sets off. "All right, according to Wainwright, it's this way." The god has spoken. Something tells me I'm going to hear the phrase "according to Wainwright" a lot over the next 2 weeks. Following the needle, Martin makes 3 strides before the peak gets him. Down he goes, face down, unable to get up. I'm too wet and tired to laugh. This happens over and over again to us both. After a couple of hours, we are coated in black sludge to the waist and my boots gurgle full of black water. We aren't laughing now. Just as I'm thinking things can't get any worse, Martin's shoes come off completely and he tries to pull his feet out of the mud. Shoeless, he teeters for a moment before falling back into the mud. At least I have my Czechoslovakian boots that stay on my feet. Martin has his street shoes. They are branded Tough by their manufacturers, who claim they are go-anywhere shoes. But I don't think they had 270 miles of peat in their mind when they said that. Our progress is painfully slow, but eventually we emerge from the mist on the far side of Kinder, wet, filthy and exhausted. That night, under the shelter of our improvised tent, we reflect on the fact that we have only covered half the distance we planned for that day. Kirkjetome, the village at the end of the way, feels further away than ever. "This isn't going well," I point out before we drift off to sleep. Martin doesn't respond, but his feet, outside in the rain, wouldn't disagree. The following day, we're trying to pack up our saturated tent. There's a problem. The rain has swelled the wooden sections of the poles, and now they won't come apart. Martin pulls with all his might on one end of the pole, whilst I heave at the pointed end. We wrestle backwards and forwards, but it resists all our efforts. We are struggling away when the tousled head of a Boy Scout pops up from behind a wall, his eyes growing wide with alarm.
"Mr. Walters! Mr. Walters!" he yells. "Come quick! There's 2 men here trying to stab each other!"
The Boy Scout is immediately joined by several more startled scouts and, finally, by a concerned Mr. Walters. Mr. Walters grasps the situation instantly and clips the tousled head behind the ear.
"Idiot!"
the scoutmaster glares at his errant charge.
"Have you tried eating it up?" he inquires of us.
We hadn't. When we try this, it comes apart. Obviously, years of experience in the tented world of Boy Scouts have not been wasted on Mr. Walters. Yesterday, we battled with one dark beast monster. Today, we must face a bigger one, Bleaklow. The clue about the nature of Bleaklow is in its name. If you look up Godforsaken Place, you'll find a photo of the hill. Even Wainwright himself, the man of whose love of the hills is legendary, has little time for it. He wrote, "Nobody loves Bleaklow. All who get on it are glad to get off." This section is commonly considered the toughest of the Pennine Way. It's certainly mucky, too often belaboured by wind and rain and frightening in the mist. The rain grew heavier as we climbed into the very mist he was talking about. After an hour or so, the sleeves of my plastic mac began to fall off
and soon I was left with a long waistcoat. My flimsy over trousers surrendered to the enemy and split down the middle. We were plunging into an even worse nightmare of Pete than the day before.
Well, that account was of our attempt on the Pennine Way some 40 years ago, but more recently this year, with us at a handful of years over 60, on that particular day we finished both the section across Kinder Scout and Bleaklow in the same day. Unfortunately, when we arrived at Croydon, as we knew already really, the youth hostel we used all those years ago closed two or three years ago now, possibly more. But there is a lovely little campsite there. They've just opened some new showers and it's all very clean and very modern, very comfortable place to be. So we whiled away our night there. Now, also, I should say that in Croydon, all those years ago, there was no pub, which was a major blow to us then. But fortunately, my mate Joe had brought his van, which doubled as a mobile bar for us. So we were able to ease the pain of aching limbs by rubbing them with alcohol on the outside and coating them on the inside. So that's my little day blog of the first day of the Pennine Way. You can see a lot more and read more about it on my the written blog on johndburns.com. There you'll find links to the various sites which give you information on where to stay, campsites, and various accounts of the kind of route you'll encounter if you fancy doing the Pennine Way. So that's been me, John Burns. My book is The Last Hill Walker, and that's about to come out any minute now as I'm speaking. It'll be out on the 31st of May. So do pop along there. And I'm sure if you've enjoyed this podcast, you'll enjoy the book too. So join me next week for our next adventure on the Pennine Way in leg two, which is Croydon or somewhere else, I can't remember. Do join us anyway. Bye bye.